Joining us now is a former staff member of KFUO Radio and a good friend of the ministry. In fact, his entire family is. Dave Fiedler joins us from the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod headquarters, where, Dave, you head up what?
Hey, Paul, good morning. I'm in charge of the General Services Department here, which is things like our facilities, the cafeteria and mail room, the folks who work in our purchasing and arrange our meetings, all that sort of stuff. It's a good day for me when the elevators go up and down and the air conditioning comes on like it's supposed to and the water fountains all work.
How's your fundraising effort going for the Walther Cemetery?
You know, it's been going great, Paul. This past month, you know, right at the end of October, we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the birth of CFW Walther. And there were a number of events planned in St. Louis and around the Synod in observance of that. And so as part of that, we were able to spotlight the mausoleum in Concordia Cemetery where Walther and his wife are buried. That's one of the things that is in my area of responsibilities. And so we were able to really show folks what that is and what a nice piece of history it is, and how it's terrific for us to be able to keep it up in a way that reflects the gift that Walther was to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
How can listeners learn more about how to support that effort?
Paul, people who want to find out more can go to the Foundation website, and that specific address is LCMS Foundation, lcmsfoundation.org/Walther. lcmsfoundation.org/Walther. W-A-L-T-H-E-R. And if nothing else, there's some terrific photographs of the structure. You can see, you know, it's 40 feet tall and granite and marble and open. It's got windows that go around six of the eight sides so you can see inside to where a statue of Walther stands and the plates on the floor that mark the final resting place of his earthly remains, at least, he and his wife.
Our phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Perhaps our listeners don't realize that David Fiedler is also a local author. You've released two novels, the first being Enemy Among Us, POWs in Missouri, during World War II, and perhaps we should stop there and you should give us a glimpse into that effort.
Sure, Paul. That's a history of the German and Italian soldiers who were captured overseas and fighting during World War II, and actually sent to Missouri and held here in camps during three or four years of the war until it was finished. And Missouri wasn't unique. There were over 400,000 prisoners of war in the United States. Now just think about that for a moment. 400,000 enemy soldiers in the United States during World War II. That's an amazing thing to me in itself. Even more amazing is the fact that they were here and didn't cause a lot of trouble. Most were content to be out of the fighting, and so our government put them to work on farms and in factories and doing forestry, and there was an awful lot of contact with ordinary people side by side working in these fields and small towns. And it was they were still prisoners of war, obviously. It wasn't like it was a four-year holiday, but they were well treated, they were paid for their work, they developed relationships with these people that often turned into friendships that lasted many years after the war.
Did some of them stay after the war?
You know, our government was real clear that they all needed to return to Europe, not only to help reestablish society over there, but, you know, it would have been the difficult thing to assimilate that number of people immediately after the war. So they all had to go back, but a number did return as immigrants, a fairly small number. There were probably a dozen or 15 here in St. Louis area that I talked to when I was doing research for that book. But a large number did come back to return as visitors. They'd hit retirement age, Paul, and have time and money to travel. And, you know, they'd want to come back to St. Genevieve County where, you know, there were 5,000 Italians in a camp there, or, you know, here in Chesterfield Valley where we had, you know, 400 German prisoners of war at a time that worked on those truck farms in the Gumbo Flats, and they were put to work on farms in Kirkwood and De Pere and, you know, prisoners in Jefferson Barracks. A lot of them had a desire to come back and see the places where they had spent some relatively pleasurable weeks and months, and, you know, to reacquaint themselves with the folks that they had become friends with and had been, you know, in many cases corresponding with since the time that they had left.
I wonder who did that work when they left and went back to Germany.
Yeah, you know, their labor filled in for our men who were off at war.
I see.
And so it was a little bit of a balancing act. We needed to ship them home, the Germans back and the Italians back home to Europe after the war, but not so fast that it outstripped the pace of our people who were returning. Because, yeah, they literally saved the day in terms of agriculture for sure, because the situation was desperate enough with our soldiers, our young men being pressed into service, that in agriculture, you know, crops would have rotted in the field if the prisoner of war labor hadn't been there to bring in, you know, to do this very necessary work.
Hmm. And now you've got a companion novel to the first book titled My Enemy, My Love.
That's right, Paul. You know, in talking with people and hearing about the stories that they told, the friendships that developed, and, you know, even though romance was forbidden, of course, there's always a little bit of that flirting, you know, sometimes subtle, sometimes more overt between young men and women, but it's certainly a dangerous topic. And so the novel came out of some ideas that I received, just inspiration from people in talking about that, little, you know, hints at things that took place. And so that's a fictional counterpart to the original history, sure. And it tells the story of a German professor who is opposed to the war and opposed to the Nazis, but he gets drafted in the late days of the war when they're pressing everybody into military service. And, of course, he's a lousy soldier, so he gets captured almost immediately and sent here to the United States as a prisoner of war. And this is where he comes to Missouri, and there's ties to the historical aspects of it that are true. For instance, the Missouri governor, Lloyd Stark, his family owned a huge orchard and greenhouse nursery-type operation up near Louisiana, Missouri, near Hannibal. And that you'd recognize them as the
Stark
people
nursery,
who
sure.
originated the golden, delicious apple.
Huh.
So, you know, they had prisoners of war there. So this is where I drew a little inspiration. The senator in Missouri at that time is the owner of this farm where this German prisoner of war gets sent, and his daughter's running the place because the guy's off at D.C., and his other sons, her brothers, are off in the war. And so she's overseeing this big operation, and those two get acquainted, and romance develops despite both of their hesitations and both of their resistance, and it's a dangerous thing for them in a lot of ways. The Nazis in the camp are after our German friend because they consider him disloyal and complicit. The Americans they don't know what's going on, but they think something's up, and, you know, they are attracted to this girl, and one of the camp guards, in fact, had a relationship with her earlier on, and so, you know, he's kind of the scorned suitor, and it all kind of comes down. There's black market ring smuggling and gasoline and cigarettes that they discover that puts them at some risk, and
wow.
It all kind of comes together in a... there's some romance for sure, but there's gunfights and car chases and all the good things you need to make it interesting.
Would you call this fiction based on some facts?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's go to the phones here. Herman's on KFUO Radio with author David Fiedler.
Yes, Mr. Fiedler, thank you for taking my call. Just there, the novel you're working on and your studies on the prisoners of war. Two questions. One, did you come across instances of German Lutheran men being held here in the United States as prisoners of war, and any anecdotal concerns or discoveries about their time here and how they appraised it and so forth? And also, if you're in charge of the facilities out at the International Building, can the public come into the cafeteria and have a meal?
Yes, two terrific questions, and I'll answer them both, but I'll flip the order around. We welcome visitors to the International Center anytime the building's open, which are typical work hours. We're located at Lindbergh and Interstate 44 in Kirkwood, and our facility has the cafeteria, as you mentioned, and people are welcome to partake of a meal there. An interesting thing is the Concordia Historical Institute Museum, which is relatively new. It's only a couple of years old, and it's a terrific representation of the origins of our faith and the origins of our church body, and the work that the LCMS has done and is doing today. And that's a nice thing for individuals or church groups or youth groups, schools, whatever. It's a great thing, and we welcome visitors here. There's a chapel as well with daily services at 10 o'clock that people are welcome to participate in. Now, the other question was related to Lutherans among the prisoner of war population, and I really appreciate that too, because the LCMS had a wonderful history in reaching out in ministry to those prisoners of war, because On the large military bases, there were full-time chaplains, of course. They started with these prisoners of war, holding them in 4,000, 5,000 men camps at places like Fort Leonard Wood, but very quickly dispersed them into these smaller camps and little towns around the state where there wasn't that formal religious presence. So our Lutheran congregations and our pastors were spectacular in reaching out to the prisoners of war and providing military religious service, rather, to them on an informal and often voluntary basis. You know, there's a common, of course, heritage and language for sure in World War II, you know, where many of our pastors were very fluent in German. And so they were diligent about reaching out to the prisoners of war to offer religious services. An interesting sidelight to that is that among the prisoners of war, of course, were captured students who had been in the seminary in Germany. And they were able to participate in correspondence courses with Concordia Seminary and to take back theological books, vestments, altar ware, you know, communion ware for use in Germany and helping to restore the church there after the war. So it's really a terrific and noble history of our church there with the way that we reached out in faith and love and witness to these prisoners of war to help them during their time here.
That sounds like another novel.
Yeah, you know, it's there are many interesting accounts of that taking place, and you know, people who really went out of their way to help these prisoners of war.
And Herman, if I might jump in here, David, you know, some of those German soldiers were Roman Catholics too. I know my German heritage was Roman Catholic. Did the Catholic Church here in St. Louis parallel what was going on in the Lutheran Church?
Yes, and that's a good point, Paul. They were fairly evenly split between Catholic and Lutheran or evangelical is how they would identify them, identification. And when the Nazis were still in control, both in Germany and in their influence in the prisoner of war camps, participation in religious life was fairly suppressed. But after Nazi Germany collapsed in the spring of 1945, we still had these prisoners for an additional year before we sent them back to Germany in the summer of 1946. And so it was really at that point that religious life flourished. And you're right, Paul, the Catholic Church reached out in exactly the same manner in providing chaplains to the prisoners in these large camps, in an informal manner, in these temporary agricultural camps that sprang up around the state, and providing them with literature and musical instruments and, you know, the necessary items for worship, and did the same sort of thing. You know, our church is here, whether Lutheran, Catholic, and so on, really recognize, they seize the opportunity to provide ministry to these prisoners.
Herman, that's a story we might not realize had it not been for David writing these books.
Well, that was a terrific question from Herman, too. I appreciate that very much.
One more quick question. You mentioned the Concordia Historical Institute. Has that been moved from the seminary campus out to the international building?
What they have here, Herman, is the museum that attractively displays some of their most important and interesting artifacts and does a great job of educating people who either, you know, are well-versed in our history or being exposed to it in the first time. On information that tells that sort of story. So that's the kind of the public-facing piece here. What's maintained on the seminary campus is their research center and their archives, the administrative offices, and, you know, the large collection of documents that they have and the aids and information they would have for people who are pursuing a particular project. They also have a smaller exhibit area that had been previously the museum there before it was relocated at the International Center, and just this past week, or a week ago, I should say, in conjunction with the Walther birth date bicentennial, they have opened a new exhibit on CFW Walther that is spectacularly well done. And another thing I'd encourage people to partake.
Herman, thanks for the call.
Well, thank you.
And David Fiedler, My Enemy, My Love is available now where?
You know, Paul, the best way to get it is to go to the website I have set up. It's on Amazon, and it's also available as an e-book. I can point you to those through the website, and it's available directly there, and it's just davefiedler.com. Dave, first name, and then last name is Fiedler, F-I-E-D-L-E-R. Kind of like Arthur Fiedler.
Okay.
Davefiedler.com, and all the information on both books is there, as well as some programs that I give on it around the St. Louis area.
And this book features some original artwork, huh?
Yes, that's a particularly interesting aspect of it, in my opinion. A prisoner of war named Paul Markle was here in Missouri, and he was a very gifted artist, and he sketched and painted the whole time that he was here in Missouri. And so in the course of researching the first book, I came into contact with his descendants and also into some copies of his artwork myself, and was able to incorporate that with the story. So the things he sketched go along with the novel as I tell. You know, he's got pictures of working on the farm, playing cards in the barracks, you know, walking with his friend at night, you know, things that fit with nicely with segments of my story. So I was able to put in that terrific artwork in places where it just went along very naturally.
Dave Fiedler, thanks for being with us today. Hope you get a bike ride in while the weather's favorable. No wind right now. It's still out there.
Hey, I rode this morning, Paul. It's great. I hope we've got some time left, but the clock's ticking for sure.
Yeah, I got 30 in yesterday. I feel great today, too.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks a bunch, Paul. Take care, and take care of all of the listeners.
Okay.